to the Buddha, to the Dharma, to the Sangha. During a recent retreat to the laity here, I did talks on the subject of hearing the voice of the eternal. I don't suppose there's any subject that you could raise in religion that has the potential to give rise to a cloud of worry, fear, and doubt than this simple concept. I touched on two or three of the specific forms that such worries and fears and doubts take in the talks I did during that retreat. Now I'd like to talk a little bit more about the more or the deeper spiritual nature of doubt. I frequently said that during a time of retreat in 1980, I was shown very clearly that all doubt is rooted in self-doubt. At the time, I didn't know that I was going into a period of prolonged struggle with doubt. But that, as so often is the case, I was given the teaching that I needed right at the beginning of that period. I certainly didn't always remember it by any means. Yet that teaching has proved, in my own experience, to be completely true. So while it is true that people can and do get it seriously wrong sometimes when they think they're hearing the voice of the eternal or the voice of God, the doubt that any particular individual has, the deeper nature of the doubt that any particular individual might have about his or her own capacity to hear the voice of the eternal, isn't really about the fact that people get it wrong sometimes, not infrequently. Doubt is an aspect of delusion. And delusion is the surface appearance of ignorance. And what it really comes down to in the end is something very simple. And something very logical. If one begins with the premise that for whatever reason one is unworthy, unworthy of the love of the eternal, then that alone is enough to make one seriously doubt one's capacity to hear the voice of the eternal. The brain will produce all kinds of good reasons that support and evidence that supports this doubt. But the roots of the problem lie elsewhere. And the roots of the problem lie within oneself. Interestingly enough, the people who believe that they're always hearing the voice of God, and those people are people who most of us think of, and justifiably so, as being crazy in some way or other. Are working from the same premise. People who think they're the special emissary of God. The people who have, in effect, become God in their own head are doing so because they're seeking a resolution to that problem, a solution to that problem of the conviction of unworthiness. And at a certain point, one rebels against the conviction and tries to take the worthiness to crown oneself, as it were. That's just swinging from one opposite to another in actual fact. It may be that the hardest thing for us to do is to sit still and actually let ourselves be loved by the eternal. The initial experiences of that love can have a good element of pain in them. So that one does not recognize that it is love. because that love is exposing the agonized delusion and the deep grief that flowed forth from it in the stream of karma. That's why one of the scriptures says, this is not an exact word for word quote, that's the general gist of it. That the eternal brings to that which is uncompassionate and untrue, that which is hard to bear, its cleansing energy. This is why sitting in meditation sometimes there can be so much pain. That which is uncompassionate, untrue, is our own judgment of ourselves. Our own karmically inherited conviction of unworthiness. Our own self-doubt. If we persist in our training, if we stick it out through the days and through the hours and the days and the months and the years of difficulty, that hard knot of delusory certainty that nothing in the universe could look upon something so unworthy and love it unconditionally. That hard knot is softened and loosened. And we come to know that love in a way that is less painful and at times blissful. And it is the same love. It is not the love that has changed. It is the degree and ultimately the very conviction itself, the degree of the conviction and eventually the quality of the conviction, the quality of the certainty of unworthiness. That's what changes. Until worthiness and unworthiness fall away. And there is the eternal. There is the love of the eternal. And there is oneself and others living within that love, doing the best we can. One of the things that Reverend Master pointed out in How to Grow a Lotus Blossom one of the things that I love so much about it, that I love so much about her, I love so much about the truth that she experienced and showed us in her life and in her teaching. When she talked about the fact that what gave her the greatest joy was in that sea of lotuses, there were innumerable beings. She was not alone there. She was not special. There were innumerable beings. Each of them in its own unique position along the path of training and enlightenment. She never said, oh, these are only Buddhists here. These are only monks. These are only special people. There is no specialness there. All beings possess the Buddha nature, the fundamental tenet of Buddhism. All beings possess the inherent capacity to realize the truth, the fundamental tenet of spiritual good sense. Each of us in our own way has to wade at times through the muck of the self-doubt, the muck of the externalized doubt that finds fault in others, because really we're questioning ourselves, querying ourselves. And each of us has the opportunity to train with that. And to work at looking up, learning to look up, practicing looking up, when we could look down, when we are embarking on the path of looking down, when we have actually taken steps on that path, to simply stop and to look up instead. Whatever we may do, whatever another person may do, neither we nor they are ever, in truth, separate from the love of the eternal. The fundamental light of the Buddha nature that manifests is that little spark of faith that everyone possesses, whether they know it or not, the capacity to look up. That is inextinguishable. Cannot be destroyed. In Lotus Blossom, River Master wrote, "Whether I am well or sick, brightly or alive or dying, hold fast to the Lord of the house." You can substitute anything else there too. Whether I am trusting myself or doubting myself, whether I am trusting others or doubting others, hold fast to the Lord of the house. Look up, sit still, let go of externals. And what's real and important is right there with us. That's the foundation from which we do hear the voice of the Lord of the house. That which speaks in silence and in stillness. Transitory states of looking down, transitory states of despair, transitory states of confusion, of grief. These can't stop us along the path unless we let them. Above all, transitory states of fear. They can't stop us unless we let them. If it is the deepest longing of one's heart to reharmonize with the eternal, one can do so. The doubt says, "I'm unworthy, we're all unworthy. We can't really do it. Let's settle for second best." Sometimes one just has to say, "Right, well, you can think that if you wish, and I'm going on." Homage to all the Bodhisattvas.